Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com. Today is Monday, December 19th, 2005, and this is show number 22. My apologies for not getting a podcast out yesterday, as hopefully you saw on the website, I was struck down with the Martian death flu for the last week. I can now form complete sentences without coughing, and my voice is nearly back to normal. I've heard a few podcasters go ahead and post when they're sick, and it's just awful, so I decided not to subject you to that. Well, let's do a quick country update. Welcome to our new listeners from Luxembourg, Iceland, and Senegal. Senegal was one I'd never heard of, so I headed over to the CIA World Factbook again, and it appears to be in Africa near a bunch of other countries I've never heard of either. It's on the westmost edge of Africa near Mauritania. Well, I don't know what Mauritania is either. But anyway, I can't believe we keep adding new countries so often. I guess there's a lot of countries out there. That is the first country we've had in Africa, so that's pretty exciting. Let's see. I've been pleased to see the reduction in the percentage of listeners using Internet Explorer after the discussion we had last week about the benefits from a security perspective of using alternative browsers. I talked quite a bit about the idea of using Firefox or Mozilla or some other browsers rather than Internet Explorer. And now we used to run around 20% of our listeners using Internet Explorer, and this week it dropped to 14%. Good work, guys. Let's see that drop even further. This next section is titled Check Your Links. I want to encourage any of you who do any sort of website blog work to always, always, always check your links. I know this is obvious and everybody knows to do that, but I have the most perfect illustration of why you must do that, and I have to repeat the advice. Get this, last week when I put up my podcast, I put the usual link to it on podfeet.com, to the audio. Evidently, I wasn't paying really good attention because somehow I double-dribbled on the HTTP part, so the link I put in was actually http://http:// and then the rest of the link. Well, that wouldn't be so bad, right? It should have done a harmless error that would just bring up a happy little 404 error. But imagine my horror when I click the link to test it, and the bad link defaulted to Microsoft's homepage. Interesting that this only happened on Firefox, not on Safari, but how scary is that? Anyway, I wonder how they got the rights to double HTTP takes you to Microsoft. So that's the lesson for today, is always check your links. You might not know where they go if you don't test them. I want to talk a little bit about Google Earth versus Windows Live Local. I mentioned Google Earth last week and how a beta version sneaked out for the Mac. I did some soul searching and decided to take the risk of making the file available to you, even though it's not supposed to be out there. Once the real version is out, I'll just link to that, but for the time being, use this with caution. It's super beta, crashes a little bit, but shows you what it can be. It's pretty close. It's really not too bad. So take a look in the show notes for a link to download Google Earth for the Mac right there in the show notes. Google Earth for Windows can officially be downloaded at earth.google.com. Google bought the technology from Keyhole and changed it from a paid service to free. You used to have to pay Keyhole to use that. I'm delighted that Google is staying with its cross-platform compatibility, as Keyhole's was a Windows-only application. For those of you who haven't seen Google Earth, it's a mapping program that uses real satellite photographs. The thing that makes it feel really cool is it starts with a picture of the entire globe, rotates it around, and zooms in as though you're flying into it. It's a very startling effect and really fun, especially if you pick two spots to move between that are across the globe. The clarity of the photographs is really hit or miss, depending on where you're looking. Some areas are photographed to frightening detail, really amazing. For certain areas, you can even tilt the view. So, for example, you can actually fly down into the Grand Canyon. So you can rotate the Earth a little bit and fly down into it. For major cities, you can also have it represent the buildings in 3D. But they're kind of like cardboard boxes representing the shapes. It kind of helps you visualize what the city looks like, but it's not very realistic. Microsoft has a competing product they call Virtual Earth, which you can use online without downloading an application at all at local.live.com. This works in IE and in Firefox, both Mac and PC, but not in Safari. Visual Earth is also a database of satellite images, but the way they take it up a notch is they've taken photos from four different angles. That means that when you look up your own house, which of course is what everybody does first, if there's an icon for bird's eye imagery on the left, you can get 3D pictures from north, south, east, and west angles. It's a little creepy to see how much detail is actually available. I mean, you could recognize cars of your neighbors and all kinds of things. The usage is kind of clumsy, though. You can slide the picture around like with Google Maps, but once you get to the end of a screen, like it's got only so much width and so much height, you have to click on a thumbnail to move to the next photo over. So they're not seamlessly sewn together like on Google. So it makes it kind of hard to keep track of where you are because they don't overlap either. Both Google Earth and Windows Live Local are fun to play with and could be helpful in figuring out the lay of the land before you travel, but I suspect most people just play with it for now. Next, I'm going to spend some time teaching you how to find more podcasts. This might seem like a strange thing to do on a podcast, but I'm going to help you find other podcasts to listen to. I've been messing around a little bit with podcast directories, and the first couple didn't impress me much on being able to find the things I was looking for. While the tech podcasts I listen to keep me entertained, I want to turn more people on to podcasting, and the best way to do that is to start with a person's interest first, and then see what podcasts are out there to match. I'm going to do something bold. I wrote these notes before testing the directory sites, so I'm going to pick 4 random topics and see if I can find more than one in each category in a bunch of different directories. The test is only pure if I pick the categories first, so here I go. First category I'm going to look for is knitting. I'm cheating because I already know there's 2 knitting podcasts out there, so I know we'll find something. Gardening. So many people are into this, there's just got to be some here. French cooking, not just any cooking. And surfing. This one probably won't be there because I mean the water kind of surfing. Off to my test. First, I need to pick some podcast directories. If I weren't already into it, I would just go to Google and search for podcast directory. So let's see what we find. The first 6 hits are podcast.net, podcastdirectory.com, iTunes, podcastalley.com, Yahoo Podcasts, and iPodder.org. I'll go through each one and see if I can find the 4 subjects. I'll first see what they can find, but then I'll evaluate how easy they make it for us to find the websites and the RSS feed for the actual podcast. I know some directories have players too, so I'll do a quick eval on that one too. I'll test the feed in my iTunes for my own convenience. That's the podcatcher that I prefer to use. So we'll start with podcast.net. The first thing I see is a nice big search window that has a pull-down starting with title and description. This pull-down has more choices, one of which is keywords. That seems like a good place to start our search. Note that there are also categories to browse, such as entertainment, art, sciences, and a whole bunch more, and there are even little hints to what's in the category. Like for entertainment, it says music, celebrities, comedy. There's even a handy little alphabet for browsing tags if you like that path. That opens up 2 ways to go, but I'm a search kind of person, so I'll start there. Here's the results. Podcast.net found 3 knitting, 3 gardening, 17 cooking, but only 2 of which had 1 episode that featured French cooking in 1 episode, and 2 surfing podcasts, one of which is a video podcast. For each feed, podcast.net found it had a button for the RSS feed, a play button that launched a player, and a button that said web that took me directly to the author's website. It also had the host name, description, location, and language, very important in this global medium. It showed a button for RSS, not the standard symbol, but still pretty obvious that you were supposed to click on it. It also featured a button labeled Play next to the name. The player played in both Safari and Firefox and appeared to be actually using QuickTime to play the file. It was a teeny little cue before the file started playing, not the standard QuickTime cue, but a little tiny one. I decided to try the video surfing podcast in the player, and it came out as a thin line of video not working properly. I clicked on the RSS button, then copied the URL that came up and pasted it into iTunes, Advanced, Subscribe to Podcast, and it came in perfectly. Technically, it didn't have any surfing in it, but it did have the most amazing whale-watching video I've seen in a long time, edited well and great music. I did go through a couple other episodes, and it turned out they did have some surfing, but mostly just real pretty Hawaiian music and some peaceful imagery, so a lot of fun anyway. So far, podcast.net really met my requirements in a clean interface with several methods to find podcasts and returned a number of podcasts in each category. I also like that after a search was found, the search window was in that new window too, so I didn't have to go back. Overall, a pleasant and productive experience. Podcastdirectory.com. My first impression of Podcast Directory after leaving podcast.net is that this site has a lot of stuff going on beyond what I'm looking for. No judging yet, just a little scary in comparison. There are 4 columns, one for Podcast Directory, Featured Podcasts, a Sales column, Most Popular, and then a column called Internet Radio. Not sure what that's about, but in the first column, there's my happy search window titled Search Podcasters. Well, that's close to Search Podcasts. There are browsing methods too, but it's by Google Map, by genre, by region, by language, by popularity, by buzz, and video podcasts. It doesn't have different search options like podcast.net, but let's give it a whirl. Podcast directory found one knitting, one gardening, no French cooking, but to be fair, when I removed the French restriction, it found 20 cooking shows, and podcast.net didn't find any French cooking podcasts either, and one surfing show. Searches return a list of the podcasts along with a whole bunch of information about them, such as a standard XML button, a list of the most recent shows, the artwork, a short description, and a link that says subscribe to this feed. The subscribe link takes you to the XML link, so you have to cut and paste that into iTunes or other player, just like in the other podcast directory. I just noticed a very non-standard dark blue box with an artsy version of MP3 written in it, which is the link to the MP3 file. But it's even got the wrong nomenclature for the size of the file. It says a number followed by MBS, which should mean megabytes per second, but that doesn't make any sense, so they must mean megabytes. Maybe I'm too close to the nomenclature. Perhaps the normal human would figure it out easier. Overall, podcast directory includes more information after a search, but it didn't find near as many as podcasts as podcast.net. I also didn't like to have to back up and erase my search term to search again, and the initial interface is way messier than podcast.net. iTunes. iTunes has brought podcasting to the masses, but I have some real beefs with the misleading nature of this tool. I'll keep it in the framework I've started, but I'm biased right off the bat. I launched iTunes, and on the left under Library is a nice icon for podcasts. So far, so good. At this point, if you've never downloaded any podcasts, you're faced with a big ol' empty window. Oh, wait. There, written down at the bottom are the words podcast directory followed by an arrow. Maybe I should click that? Be more obvious, Apple. Come on. Oh, well, once I do that, I'm taken to the iTunes Music Store. Wait, I didn't want to pay for anything. What am I doing in the store? You know, I know it's nothing to get alarmed at, but what about the uninitiated? I think some free-looking buttons thrown around would be nice, but then again, all podcasts aren't free, but just most of them. Okay, so now that I'm in the store, I'm inundated with stuff. Artwork for all kinds of podcasts. Today's podcast, a pull-down at the top left that's set to podcasts, but if I disturb it, I'm not in podcasts anymore, so I don't dare touch that. There's a field that says Search All Podcasts and a nice magnifying glass next to it, along with a bunch of categories listed below that. iTunes returned 10 hits on knitting, 5 of which actually had anything to do with knitting. Wait, big beef coming up. How do I go back to the search to search a new topic? There's no back button like in a browser, and if I type in the normal search window, it's now searching all of iTunes, not just the podcast directory. Oh, it looks like there are two arrows. One turns to the left that does take you back. Okay, back to searching for French cooking, which returns 0 results. So let's try cooking. Uh-oh, time for another pet peeve. If I see a podcast about which I want more information, evidently I have to realize that the teeny little I symbol in a circle should be right-clicked. All the other podcast directories have a nice little info button, but this one is just really, really hidden. Gardening returns 14 items, about 10 of which are real, and searching under cooking returns 57 results, but many are duplicates. Many are labeled as explicit. Jeez, what's explicit cooking anyway? I don't want to know. Hey, to be fair, I did find the Toaster Oven Chef, which features recipes under $5. Who wouldn't love that? Got to give these guys a plug just for a clever name. Searching on surfing yields 18 results, 3 of which actually have to do with the water kind of surfing. One more pet peeve before I tell you what I like about iTunes. Remember that teeny little I symbol you have to click on to get the description of a podcast? Once that's opened, you may be tempted to use a standard keyboard shortcut to close that window, like Command-W on the Mac. Don't do it! Turns out that weird little description window will stay up and you close your actual iTunes windows. That's just poor programming, I think. Turns out that if you go back to the menu under Window and pull down to iTunes, it comes right back, but it always surprises me and annoys me when I do that. Okay, enough whining about iTunes. The great thing is that if you're ever successful at finding a podcast, there's a big obvious play arrow at the top so you can sample a podcast with all your search results showing, the artwork, and most importantly, a big subscribe button. If you hit subscribe, you're all done. I don't think it's even close to the best way to search for a podcast, but iTunes makes subscribing trivial. Once you hit subscribe, it brings in the most recent episode, but also shows you some episodes before that with a big button labeled Get next to them, in case you want to get the older episodes too. All right, wait, one more point about iTunes, and then I'll be done. When a podcaster creates their feed suitable for iTunes, they're asked to choose a category, a subcategory, and a sub-subcategory, or several of them. The idea is that if you were in the iTunes Music Store, you could click on the category Technology, for instance, and then within that choose Operating System, and then within that choose Mac, and you'd find the NoCillaCast. This used to work just as I described, but about a month ago or a month and a half ago, it broke. So if you click on Technology, instead of opening the Technology pane, it opens the Browse window at the top left of the Music Store again. So you still have to choose Podcasts, then you choose Technology, and then there's only one Browse pane left in which all podcasts are lumped together. Yes, all 8,000, 10,000 of them are in one huge list. I wrote to some prominent podcasters to see if they could ask Apple to fix it, but nothing's happened, and I certainly don't have any influence with them. The Browse feature of iTunes is completely worthless until they fix it. All right, Podcast Alley's the next one. It opens in a relatively clean interface with an obvious search window on the left, which also allows a genre to be chosen. There's a list of the newest podcasts as well as a top 10 list. After running a search, it did leave the search entry point available again, which is what I like. It returned 4 knitting, 11 gardening, 49 cooking, but none for French cooking. I'm starting to think there's no French cooking podcasts out there. Sounds like a hole someone needs to fill. And 10 surfing podcasts. One thing I really liked with Podcast Alley is it gives a very clean list of the search results, and if you click on one of them, it expands just a little bit to include a short description, a button to get the podcast, one to vote on whether you like it, and one to see more details. The cool thing was that it left all the other names up there not expanded, just doing as many as you click on. When I clicked on Get Podcast, it put the link to the XML in a clean little field and even better included a short 3-line description on how to listen to the podcast, including a link to download an aggregator. Very nicely done by Podcast Alley. Yahoo Podcast is next. Initial impressions of Yahoo Podcast is pleasant. 3 major columns titled What We Like This Week, What Other People Like, and Explore on Your Own, which is where you can browse podcasts by category. On the upper right, there's even a link titled What the Heck Is a Podcast? Across the top is an obvious podcast search window, so let's jump right in. When I did the first search for knitting, it found not only 3 knitting podcasts, it also found 7 episodes of other podcasts that mentioned knitting. So they're not in the description, but they were actually in the notes. That's kind of a neat feature. The search window is still here after a search. You know how I like that. The real surprise was that Yahoo actually found a podcast it thought was about French cooking. Not sure it really was, though. However, it did pull 17 podcasts that referred to French cooking in at least one episode. I noticed that the search window has a pull-down that allows you to search podcasts, episodes, or podcasts and episodes, so that's why I'm getting better hits. Okay, back to searching. Looking for gardening, it found 3 on the subject and 272 that mentioned it. I've noticed one thing. All of these sites have found a site, or all of these different search engines have called a site called Microbe World Radio. It has nothing to do with gardening, but they keep saying it's about gardening. It's about science and microbiology. Surfing returned 2 real podcasts and 314 episodes containing surfing, but I bet a lot of those were about web surfing. I was too lazy to go back and check and see how many were real. The search results have a button next to them that says Listen and one that says Subscribe. Here's where Yahoo falls down. In Safari, when I click on Play, it opens up a new window and claims it's playing the episode, but I hear nothing. Nothing in Firefox either. The real crime of Yahoo is that if you click Subscribe, it requires you to log in. And I know it's a free login, but it makes me nuts when they do that. Annoying as this is, I'll sacrifice for my audience and log in. All right, now it says I'm subscribed. But, like, in what aggregator? How do I listen? It's not at all clear to me. Maybe this is one of those things where they made it simple and I'm expecting the standard methods, but I can't tell how to listen to this darn thing. The help section says you'll need to get some great music software like Yahoo Music Engine or Apple iTunes. I checked NoCillaCast, which is registered at Yahoo Podcasts, and evidently 3 people have figured out how to subscribe here. If any of you are listening and can tell me how you did it, send me an email at allison@podfeet.com. I did notice after I clicked these buttons a couple of times that 2 copies of each of the podcasts I clicked subscribe on are sitting in my home directory. And that's a really annoying place for it. Not sure what that's all about. The last podcast directory I'm going to review is iPodder.org, or IndiePodder as it's now referred to. I know it bugs Adam Curry that they coined the phrase iPodder at some point, and everybody thinks you have to have an iPod to listen to podcasts, but you all know you don't. So anyway, they're trying to change the name to IndiePodder, but the link is still iPodder.org. iPodder starts out with the major focus being new podcasts, taking up about half of the window. Then there's this weird frame in the middle, which is sort of a bunch of folders, but the frame is an outline, so it's hard to see why the list sort of fades out. Maybe it looks better on the PC, but it looks lame on both Safari and Firefox on the Mac. There's a huge ad on the site in the upper right, which is kind of distracting, and then a calendar for no apparent reason, and then some explanations of what podcasting is, new podcasts, how to download something they call iPodder, which they really mean is a list of podcatching aggregators. I think that's just leftover nomenclature, but it sounds kind of funny in this day and age. Anyway, they even list the software iPodder X in there, which is actually called Juice Receiver now, since Apple told them they couldn't call it anything with iPod in the name. So, iPodder.org doesn't have any kind of search window, just the folders. So I guess we'd have to dig into these folders for the four things we're looking for. Not too convenient, in my opinion. Now, where would knitting be? Culture? Design? Or perhaps the category tattoo and body mods? Oh, come on, there's a whole category for tattoo and body mods? You know what? It's not worth my time to even use this site. I'm bailing right now. I definitely don't recommend iPodder.org. So what's the final analysis? I liked Podcast.net, Podcast Alley, and Yahoo Podcasts because they all had clean interfaces, easy-to-use search, easy to find the URLs to give to my podcatcher. Podcast Alley did the best job of cleanly giving me extra info if I wanted it and gave me the most obvious instructions on how to move the URL over to the podcatcher. Yahoo falls down on its ability to actually subscribe, so I guess I'd stick with either Podcast.net or Podcast Alley. I certainly wouldn't use iTunes or iPodder.org to find a podcast. You'd never find what you're looking for. Well, finally, I'd like to tell you about a really cool little utility I got yesterday. Have you ever deleted images from your digital camera's memory card and needed them afterwards? I did that today, and they weren't terribly important pictures, but I kind of wanted them back. I figured there'd be tons of scripts out there to unerase a card, right? Not so. For some reason, this is a really tricky thing in OS X. Not sure why this is. I thought it was just a case of where the table of contents was gone and you had to rebuild it or something. I found a lot of links for a paid one, $60 for Picture Rescue, and a lot of people who swore by it. But like I said, these photos weren't baby's first step photos or anything like that. My friend Bruce found a tool for me. It's called EXIF Untrasher, and it's designed to do only one thing: find photos in EXIF format on camera memory cards. Boy, is that narrow. But apparently a lot of people have this problem. It's freeware, and the way it works is that it creates a disk image of the card, and then it looks for the pattern that JPEGs are in when they're in EXIF format. In any case, it worked great for me, and it could be a lifesaver for you in the future. Check out the link. It's in the show notes at podfeet.com. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show today, and I hope you recognized my voice and could tell it was actually me. And so please let me know what you think by sending feedback to Allison@podfeet.com. And thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.